Welcome to episode 143 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. If you want to burn fat, gain energy, and enhance your health by changing when you eat, not what you eat, with no calorie counting, then this show is for you. I'm Melanie Avalon, author of What, When, Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo-Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine. And I'm here with my co-host, Jen Stevens, author of Delay, Don't Deny, Living an Intermittent Fasting Lifestyle. For more on us, check out ifpodcast.com, melanieavalon.com, and jenstevens.com. Please remember, the thoughts and opinions on this podcast do not constitute medical advice or treatment. So, pour yourself a cup of black coffee, a mug of tea, or even a glass of wine, if it's that time, and get ready for the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Okay, friends. People often ask me, what is the one supplement I cannot imagine my life without? And while there are a lot of supplements out there, a lot of ones that I love, a lot of ones that I advocate, there is one supplement that inspired me to create a whole supplement line. And that's because I take it every single day and I really can't imagine my life without it. That would be Serapeptase. And I'm about to tell you how to get up to 15% off on a special bottle version that we have that also saves you money. So Serapeptase is a proteolytic enzyme created by the Japanese silkworm. Now we make it in a lab, so it is vegan. When you take this enzyme in the fasted state, it actually goes into your bloodstream and it breaks down problematic proteins in your body. These are things that your immune system is often reacting to and that create inflammation. That's why it can do incredible, amazing things like clear your sinuses. That's why I first started taking it. You can completely say goodbye to allergy meds with Serapeptase. It reduces inflammation and pain. My friend just started taking it for her back pain and told me she was shocked at how effective it was, more so than the pain pills she normally was taking. It can help reduce cholesterol. It's even been shown in clinical studies to break down amyloid plaque in vitro and in vivo. Basically, it is a wonder supplement. And what's super cool about it is that it specifically breaks down those problematic non-living proteins. It doesn't harm healthy tissue. It actually helps protect that. That's because the function of the original enzyme in the silkworm is to break down the cocoon of the silkworm without actually harming the silkworm itself. And there aren't studies on this, but I really believe it can help catalyze your fast by enhancing the natural process of autophagy. Again, not studies on that, but from a mechanistic standpoint, it totally makes sense. Here's the thing. I was taking so many different brands of Serapeptase, and they always seemed a little hard on my stomach and have problematic ingredients in them, especially special enteric coatings where they wouldn't disclose what that was made of, which meant it probably contained problematic plastics. I knew I needed to make a change. That's why I created my Avalon X Serapeptase. It's what launched my Avalon X line. I will never stop taking it. It's one of my favorite things in my life, and the effects I experience are profound, and I hear that from all of you guys as well. We test it multiple times for purity and potency. It's free of all problematic fillers and common allergens. It comes in a glass bottle to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. And we even use the minimum amount of stickiness in the label on the bottle to help reduce problematic compounds. So if you want to tackle your inflammation, clear your brain fog, oh, it's amazing for brain fog, stop your allergies, attack amyloid plaque, reduce pain, so many things, you need Serapeptase. And you can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. But here's another thing. We actually have a special large bottle. It's the only supplement that we have right now in a large bottle. It's the 180 version, and it saves you money. If Serapeptase is a part of your daily life, like it is mine, you definitely want our large bottle size, 180 capsules. It's the best way to save. And again, you can save even more with my Melanie Avalon 10% discount, or you can get 15% off that as well if you get a subscription. Which, by the way, with a subscription, you could pause or cancel anytime after your first order. So it kind of makes sense to do a subscription because you save even more. If you want a supplement that you can actually feel the difference, I promise you, Serapeptase is the way to go. And then you might end up like me and want to give it as gifts to everybody because it's that incredible and can address so many issues. You can get this at avalonx.us. That's AVALONX.US. Again, there is the 90 capsule size and the 180 capsule size. You save more with the 180. Use the coupon code MelanieAvalon for 10% off or get a subscription for 15% off. And we will put all this information in the show notes.
One more thing before we jump in. Did you know that common ingredients found in skincare and makeup products can actually disrupt your endocrine system? These endocrine disruptors are a silent threat that can have significant impact on your health, including something that is very important to me, fertility. Your skin is your body's largest organ, and what you put on it matters. Endocrine disruptors are chemicals that interfere with the natural hormonal communication in the body. It also matters during pregnancy. And that's one of the reasons I pay close attention to what I put on my skin while being pregnant. Studies have shown that exposure to endocrine disruptors can affect both male and female fertility. For women, these disruptors can lead to irregular menstrual cycles, ovulation issues, and even polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS. In men, they can reduce sperm quality and quantity, making it even more challenging to conceive. But it's not just about fertility. When it comes to fat loss, one of the reasons that endocrine disruptors can get in the way of fat loss is because a lot of our toxins are actually stored in our fat. It's a way that our bodies protect us from those toxins. These toxic compounds can even work synergistically, amplifying their harmful effects and making it that much harder to shed unwanted body fat. All of these reasons are why I am obsessed with a company called Beauty Counter. The founder actually started the company when she learned about the potential dangers of toxic chemicals and their link to health issues, specifically miscarriages and infertility. While pregnant, I make sure to only use Beauty Counter products. It's one of the only makeup lines that is officially recommended from the Environmental Working Group. What really sets Beauty Counter apart is their unwavering commitment to protecting us, the consumers, from the hidden dangers that lurk in conventional beauty products. Beauty Counter goes above and beyond, rigorously screening every single ingredient that goes into their products, ensuring that they are safe, clean, and free from harmful toxins. They're not just a beauty brand, they're a movement for change, advocating for stronger regulations in the beauty industry. With Beauty Counter, I know that I can trust that the skincare and makeup that I use are not only effective, but also safe for me and my family. They have skincare lines for every skin type, as well as so many other incredible products. I absolutely love their overnight resurfacing peel. It's my favorite way to get anti-aging benefits in a skincare product. The makeup is absolutely amazing. I have tried alternative beauty products in the past and none of them truly performed. But with Beauty Counter, the foundation is so amazing. It makes me feel like my skin can breathe and it looks so dewy and beautiful. You can shop with me at beautycounter.com/VanessaSpina. New customers can use the code CLEANFORALL20 for 20% off their first order. Beautycounter.com/VanessaSpina. All right, friends, now back to the show.
Hi, everybody, and welcome. This is episode number 143 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. I'm Melanie Avalon, and I'm here with Jen Stevens.
Hi, everybody.
And how was your Christmas, Jen?
It was fabulous. How was yours?
It was fabulous as well. What did you guys do?
Well, we did the same thing we normally do. We have, you know, just different traditions of like what family goes where on what day. And we just did those things. The only sad thing is that Cal was not here. It was the first Christmas ever that I didn't see him because he's out in San Francisco with his new wife and they were not able to travel because of her job. So
yeah, I was actually talking to him on Christmas.
Oh,
we were.
Y'all were working.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. Because he was saying that he had like some time off, but I don't think she did.
She didn't have time to travel. Because, you know, it takes a lot to go all the way across from coast to coast. So.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy.
And I have an empty nest now. I have a totally empty nest. Younger son, Will, has moved out. It was his idea. He got an apartment, moved out on his own. So fingers crossed, no more yo-yoing back home.
Actually, you know what? This was a very, what's the word? Like when it's a new moment happens. I don't know. What's the word for it?
A milestone?
Sort of, but like not a milestone because it doesn't have to be celebrated. There's got to be a word for it. Well, it was a new experience. This was the first Christmas where there were significant others with the children.
Ooh.
Both my brother and sister had significant others with them.
Well, that's fun. I remember there was one Thanksgiving that both of my boys had a significant other at the Thanksgiving table. And one is Kate, who Cal married, and the other was also named Kate. She was Hannah Kate, but that was Will's girlfriend. So we had a Kate and a Hannah Kate at the table.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's pretty funny.
They are no longer together, Will and Hannah Kate, but Cal and Kate are together forever.
So one of the Kates.
There you go.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, that's fun. It is fun to have new people joining the family, right?
Yeah. Yep. It's so funny. My dad came up with this idea, and it was really funny because he thought it was a great idea for presents, and my brother and the family was like, this is just not going to go well. He got like themed presents that went together, but there was like three of each, and there's three girls, me, my mom, and my sister. So he would put three presents down and then he would have us draw straws and we could open all of them. And then we got to go in order and pick the one we wanted. Before we started, my brother was just like, this is just not going to go well. This is not going to go well. Cause it was things like makeup and like three purses. And then, and then we kept getting into, because then it's the whole thing, like, the person would get, you know, the short stick and they would go first or the whatever it is. And then the person would be like, you know, which one do you want? Oh, I don't want to pick. You know, it was just like, it was not a good idea. Not a good idea. But it all went well.
Very cool. I'm sure you've been following the news and you saw the latest journal article out of the New England Journal of Medicine. Have you seen that?
Oh, at first I thought you meant politics. I was like, nope.
No, we're not talking about no politics.
I was like, oh, do we not have a president anymore?
No politics. This is a politics-free zone. But no, the New England Journal of Medicine article. Have you seen that?
No. Which one?
It is everywhere. It is everywhere. It has been on all the news channels. It came out, it was in the December 26th. Edition of the New England Journal of Medicine. And Mark Mattson, you know, I've talked about him before. He's one of my very favorite researchers that writes about intermittent fasting. He's from Johns Hopkins. And so the article is called Effects of Intermittent Fasting on Health, Aging, and Disease. And it is just fabulous. And it's been everywhere. It's been on CNN. It's been on, all the news channels. It's been on the morning shows. I mean, everyone is excited about intermittent fasting right now. So just in time for the new year, which is thrilling because, you know, we want to save everybody from having to do a diet. We want people to find intermittent fasting because it's the last thing you'll have to do.
It's awesome. We'll have to put links to that in the show notes.
But it's just the right time for this to come out. So it's exciting that the New England Journal of Medicine released it because this is mainstream. This is like, you don't get any better than the New England Journal of Medicine.
Well, I will definitely put a link to that in the show notes. And the show notes for listeners will be at ifpodcast.com/episode143. Something else really interesting. I was just listening right before we started to one of the latest episodes on Peter Attia's podcast. And it's all about mitochondrial function and different energy substrates and such. I just laughed thinking about what you sent me on Christmas.
Yeah, I sent Melanie a Christmas present, but it was a photo out of a journal article.
It was like a study about glycogen storage and like when you're using different amounts of glycogen at what hour. She's like, Merry Christmas. I was like, this is amazing.
But it's everything I always say about when your glycogen stores get low enough, then your body switches fuel sources and that, you know, you're trying to deplete your glycogen first and then you start to make ketones and you start to burn fat. And so it showed how the free fatty acids went up in your blood at the same time as the glycogen was at the bottom. It was just, I was like, woo, I love this diagram.
This episode I've been listening to, it's painting such a nuanced picture of all of that. I'm just like, my mind is being blown because they're talking about things like free fatty acids. Like free fatty acids are typically high on both sides of the health spectrum. So people who are like severely insulin resistant and not in a good shape metabolically will have high free fatty acids because they're not using them. But then people who are very metabolically efficient and like well-trained athletes might have high free fatty acids, but it's because they're using them and it's a high turnover rate. So they were talking about how it can be misleading doing, you know, measuring these things because you don't know if it's a buildup not being used or if it's a high turnover rate being used. And then it was the same thing with glycogen stores. Like, so well-trained athletes will have actually higher glycogen storage potential, but they'll actually use less glycogen because they're more efficient. I walked away from it being like, I really need to get my glycogen stores up, but still be like a fat burner, basically. But that wasn't even what I was going to say. Oh, what I was going to say was something Peter Attia just said right before we started talking. He said when he went on like a ketogenic diet, like a long-term ketogenic diet, it took him, he said like the first 3 months were miserable, 3 months, which is like a long time. And then he said it took him 18 months for him to get to the point of the aerobic capacity that he had prior to the ketogenic diet, but then it was actually even better than, I guess, what it was before. That really made me think because 18 months, it took him a year and a half because we get so many questions about, I mean, that's the keto diet, but we get so many questions about, you know, athletes and training and things like that. That really made me consider that for some people, you know, it might take a while for the metabolic changes in the mitochondria to adjust to different dietary changes.
Yeah, it's not quick. So, you know, like I was watching the news this morning because someone said, oh, it's going to be on the Today Show. So I was like, okay. So I turned on the Today Show and they were talking, they had like the medical correspondent, the doctor, I don't know what her name is, but she's like their, you know, doctor they have on to talk about health things. And then the host, I don't know his name either because I don't ever watch the morning shows. Sorry, Today Show. But anyway, so she was talking about it and he said, yeah, I tried it for 5 days. It wasn't for me. And I'm like, oh, that's the saddest of all. You know, you can't make a decision. And then he said something that was also sad. He said, it doesn't work for me because my schedule is crazy. And I'm like, oh, friend, that's the reason it would work for you.
Whenever people say that, I'm like, no. Complete opposite.
Yeah. But the two things he said, it didn't work for me. I tried it for 5 days and my schedule's too crazy to do it. So
I was actually on the Today Show once.
Really? What was it about?
They were showing clips from Millionaire Matchmaker and I was on Millionaire Matchmaker. So they were showing it on the Today Show. And one of my friends texted me, was like, I think I just saw you on the Today Show. I was like, what? Good times. Good times. All right. Yeah. So although just for some more context, so when he said it took him 18 months, that was not for him to be like fat adapted or, you know, functional. That was for him to reach high performing athletic performance. They also go way into detail about like the different muscle fibers and fast twitch and aerobic versus anaerobic training. I learned a lot. I thought about putting it in the intermittent fasting podcast stuff we like playlist, but it's like very technical. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if
go ahead and put it in there now that we've talked about it. Yeah.
I will put a link to it. So if we are a Himalaya partnered show, you can follow us in the Himalaya app and you'll get early access to our podcast 24 hours in advance. We have a playlist in that app called the Intermittent Fasting Podcast Stuff We Like. It's all of the random episodes that we talk about from other podcasts. So I'll put that one in that playlist. I'll do that right now. So shall we jump into everything for today?
Yes, let's get started.
All right. So the first question comes from Celeste, and the subject is self-sabotage. And Celeste says, hi, ladies. I notice when I'm fasting and start to think about food, my mouth will start to salivate. It's not even an I'm so hungry thought, just the awareness of food. I've read that even the thought of food can initiate an insulin response, so I'm worried that I'm inadvertently dirty fasting. It seems partially psychological at this point and mainly happens when I think about not wanting to secrete insulin. Wondering if one theoretically salivated at the thought of food all day, would their clean fasting be voided out? Thanks and love the show. All right. So what are your thoughts, Jen?
Well, you know, it's kind of like the saying, don't think about an elephant. And now everybody's thinking about an elephant. You know, don't think about this, Celeste. Don't worry about, am I secreting insulin now? Am I thinking about food? And am I salivating? You know, I make a rule to not ever worry about things I can't control. You know, is it possible that if you visualize and imagine eating, you could cause your body to release insulin? Yeah, So just, you know, don't stress about that. Don't worry about that. No, you're not going to be dirty fasting all day long with your brain. But I would move on and not even think about it. Just say, oop, that's something I'm releasing. I don't have to think about that. I don't have to worry about that. I'm going on with my life. You know, the same thing with ambient smells. You know, if I walk past Cinnabon in the mall and I'm like, ooh, that Cinnabon smells good. By the way, it doesn't taste good to me anymore, which is sad because it smells so good. I tried one at an airport last year and it wasn't like I remembered, but I'm still smelling it and I'm still thinking it smells good. But I'm not going to worry about, hey, did my body just release a lot of insulin? Am I dirty fasting because of the smells? I just, you know, I don't want to worry about that.
Yeah, I think we should talk about the idea of dirty fasting, because I don't think dirty fasting is necessarily applying to insulin as much as it's applying to taking in things that, like actually taking in things that we think aren't affecting insulin.
Well, it would, like, for example, chewing gum. Chewing gum is an example of what we call dirty fasting, which isn't really fasting. We don't call it fasting. I mean, I actually reject the idea that there's something called dirty fasting, because I think you're either fasting or you're not.
Yeah.
So there's clean fasting and then there's not fasting. Those are the two things.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. I think that's definitely, I think going down that rabbit hole will just make things increasingly more difficult and unnecessary.
Yeah, because then you'll worry and you'll be like, and I really think that your mindset, we've talked about this before, your mindset is so important. So if you're always worried about it, that isn't a good, healthy mindset to be in. I can control what I put into my mouth. I can control whether stevia falls into my coffee cup or not, right? And whether I drink it. I can control whether I chew gum. I can control whether I eat. But I can't control sometimes what I think about or what I smell when I'm walking around. So I'm not going to worry about those things. And I have cooked for my family in the fasted state many a time. Yesterday, I sat with my husband while he ate lunch, and I didn't eat lunch, and I could smell his food. I actually had prepared the plate for him. And maybe my stomach will growl a little bit, but then I move on, and it's okay.
Yeah, I actually, I didn't eat. I went to Christmas with the family, but I didn't eat lunch when they were eating lunch. And I could have, but they had prepared all the food, and none of that food would have done well with my digestion at all. So, but it was fine. I sat there, had my water.
Yeah, that, you know, that's the thing. We're in charge of when we eat and when we don't, and we don't have to if we know the food isn't going to work well for us.
Yep.
But everybody else was celebrating, and you were celebrating with them. I actually had an 11-hour window on Christmas Day.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was fabulous. I wasn't even sorry.
Like, if they had had, originally my mom was going to make like one of the butcher box roasts. And if she had done that, I think I would have partaken. I think I would have had some, but it was a lot of things. It was stuff you love, Jen, but stuff that would just not do so well with me. Like a lot of beans and chili and soup and stuff. So
we had brunch. It was just, you know, I make cheese and sausage balls, which are, you know, I make them every year. And then, you know, we have just the traditional breakfasty, brunchy kind of things.
Yeah. They were just running late. Like I was supposed to come after lunch. Like that was the plan. But then everybody was running late. So they're like, oh, we're having lunch now. It's like, okay.
And even so, even though I ate had an 11-hour window, I still only had two meals. I had the brunch in the morning, and then I did have a little champagne in the middle of the afternoon at another family member's house, and then dinner. So it was two meals, but it was a very wide window.
Yeah, there was a lot of wine to go around. Okay, this is so funny, Jen. So you know how most people's goal for New Year's is to like drink less wine?
Is yours to drink more wine?
Yes. I'm not even kidding. Yes. Because I actually haven't been drinking wine at all. I really miss it in my life. And I want to like bring it back. But I think I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know if I'm like nervous. I don't know. I'm so like crazy about my diet and everything I'm experimenting with. So it's like one of my goals to like bring it back and be back to my wine drinking, fruit eating.
So what inspired you to cut it out? Like, what was the reason?
I think just with like the craziness of move, I think it mostly when I was like moving and the craziness of everything, I was like, I'm just going to cut out anything that could potentially, like, I don't know. I think it was just like an experiment, but honestly, I was much happier when I was like drinking all the wine and eating all the fruit. So we're gonna go back that way. So yeah, I was just laughing though, because me and my mom were talking and I was like, my goal for next Christmas is to be like drinking tons of wine. So yep, good times. Last night I was actually reading a 2019 massively long study all about the benefits of blueberries to try to convince myself to eat more blueberries. I love blueberries.
Yeah, I do love berries. I like blackberries the best.
Oh, of course you do. That's my least favorite. No, actually, no, my least favorite is raspberry.
I like raspberries too, but blackberries are my favorite.
I like blackberries, but raspberries give me headaches. Raspberries were not on our Everly well, were they?
I'm not sure.
I really want to take the longer one now, the bigger Everly well test that had more foods. So, all right, shall we move on to the next question?
Yes. This is from Lisa, and the question is about salt in my coffee. She says, hello, my name is Lisa, and I'm loving listening to your podcast. I'm on episode 25 and have not yet heard anyone address whether you can put a pinch of Himalayan sea salt into your coffee to get rid of the bitter aftertaste. I do enjoy my coffee that I make at home because I make it weak. Anytime I buy coffee out, it's usually so gross, I can't stand it. And I heard that you can add just a small pinch of sea salt without spiking your insulin, true or false.
That's another thing I haven't been having. Coffee.
Coffee?
Yeah. Oh, now I just want coffee, fruit, and wine. Anyways, Lisa, yes, you can have salt in your coffee.
Do you ever do that? Have you ever tried that?
No. Have you?
I tried it because everybody was talking about it. And then I apologized to my coffee because it ruined the coffee. But I guess maybe I put too much. I don't know. And what I hear is you sprinkle it on the grounds. What you're really supposed to do is sprinkle it on the grounds before you brew it, just a tiny bit. And I think I sprinkled a little bit into my coffee cup. It was really gross. But I actually like black coffee. So maybe if I didn't, it would have made a difference anyway. And it does not have to be pink Himalayan salt, y'all. That's like the biggest craziness out there. Everybody thinks it has to be pink salt. No.
For the coffee specifically?
Yes. There's nothing magical about pink salt. You know, I do use sea salt. Right now I'm using the Redmond's sea salt. I think is that the name of it?
Yeah. I love Redmond's.
That's the one I'm using right now with my cooking.
I think Redmond, I did a lot of research on salt ever since I read The Salt Fix, that book by, what's his name? He has a long last name. Nika something.
It starts with a D-I and then there's an N and a C. Yeah. The Salt Fix. Yeah. That'll get you there.
Yeah. He has a new book that's related to the ketogenic diet that's in my Audible list that I haven't listened to yet. I also haven't listened to Dave Asprey's new book. I'm so behind. There's too much to listen to.
Can't keep up. But yeah, the thing about the salt is, you know, his book is really great and it tells us that, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of salt. Like we've been, you know, trained to be afraid of salt, just like we've been trained to be afraid of everything. But our bodies have a natural amount of salt that we need to take in. And, you know, animals in nature will look for salt. You know, they have salt licks, for example, you know, but animals know how much their bodies need intuitively. And I've actually heard we are the same way. We know how much we need and we will keep adding salt to our food, for example, until we get just the right amount. So I don't add salt during the fast. I just salt my food well, and that's enough for me. You know, there's a whole train of thought that we have to worry about depleting our electrolytes, and we're all so fragile that if we're not drinking, you know, salty water, I don't know what's going to happen. But that all came out of the keto community, because I think that keto actually does tend to lead to electrolyte imbalances more so than maybe intermittent fasting, or perhaps if you're doing extended fasting, you might have to worry. But I've never once been, you know, having my daily, you know, daily fast, my daily time restricted, whatever, and felt like, oh gosh, my electrolytes are low. So.
Yeah, I will say ever since I've been experimenting with more low carb, I'm still thinking about how I want to get back to fruit. It's like my sugar, I didn't have sugar cravings, but I would eat, you know, lots of fruit and fruit carbs in my window. Now it's like I crave salt instead. And I don't know if that's because it could be a lot of things. It could be, you know, like you just said, with the ketogenic diet's effect on electrolytes, or it could be both salt and like sugar sweetness. Both of those tend to reduce stress hormones. So I think at night, maybe if you're not getting one, you crave the other. Rob Wolf now is a huge proponent of, especially for ketogenic diets, addressing electrolytes. But speaking of the salt, do you know why the Himalayan salt is pink?
I'm sure it's one of the minerals that's in there.
Yeah, it's the iron.
Oh, really? Oh, really? It has iron in it?
Yeah, that pinkish reddish color that, and once you realize this, you'll realize this in like meats and things, like iron content. For example, like I'm just thinking of like veal compared to beef, like the color, the pinkness, like, you know, it gets much more redder. It's a higher iron content. And when you've had anemia problems, you start to know the signs of iron in things. So yeah, little fun fact there.
Yeah, I just looked it up, and How Stuff Works says that it gets its color from calcium, magnesium, potassium, copper, and iron.
Yep. And then I think as far as like impurities and stuff goes with salts, that I do like the Redmond. That was the takeaway that I took away from that book, was Redmond seems to be the way to go as far as like getting the widest range of minerals with the least amount of potential toxins. Because like there can be slightly a problem with like heavy metals and such with like Celtic sea salts.
Well, the thing that kind of steered me away from the pink was the fact that it started being like literally everywhere. Like you could find it at TJ Maxx and you could find it, you know. And then I'm like, how do I know all this is really that? You know how when olive oil started to become like it was fake and you could buy it everywhere, but it was fake diluted olive oil. And
apparently like most of the olive oil is like fake. I mean, that's what they say.
And, you know, like supplements, you know, when they actually look at a lot of supplements and see what's in there, it's not really what it says is on the bottle. Like so many of the supplements. So then I was like, well, how do I know this pink salt really is that? So I'm like, never mind. I'm just going to stick with Redmond's because that is a brand and I know that they're not.
Yeah, I love Redmond's.
That was really what did it for me, was the fact that because I used to use pink salt, but then it was everywhere. And I was like, I don't even know if this is legit.
We should see if Redmond's would like to sponsor the podcast since we both love them.
That would be awesome. I wouldn't mind at all. I feel like such a pro because now I have it like in a little dish by my stove and I sprinkle it out of the little dish.
Oh, nice.
I know. I'm like, I feel like a professional. The sprinkling with my little, you know, instead of the shaking or grinding. But yeah.
Speaking of Marshall's, TJ Maxx, I would never buy any of the food stuff there. Like, because I feel like it had to have been made a while ago to get to that point. Same with like the cosmetics. Because you know how it's like stuff like filters down into those stores?
Right. It might be old.
Yeah. Like when I go by the cosmetics section, I'm just like, ugh.
Expired or like about to be or I don't know. I do worry about some of the food. You're right.
One more quick random side note. Did you know, because I'm about to post a whole blog post about what might be hiding in cosmetics and skincare? Because it's regulated by the FDA, but it's not regulated. Like the FDA is the company in charge of regulating it, but they literally don't regulate it. Like that's what they say on their website. There's no testing. It's crazy. I could go on a huge, huge tangent. It's basically like if you had speed limits, but no police.
Wow.
And then the speed limits would be even like kind of ridiculous. Like they've only banned like 8 chemicals compared to Europe that has banned like 1,500. So anyways, did you know when it says fragrance on like a cosmetic thing? Because you know, they'll often say fragrance on the back.
Yeah.
Did you know that means it can contain anything and the government can't question them?
No.
It's the fragrance loophole from the 1960s. So like if a cosmetic company is, it just like blew my mind. If they're making a makeup, so listeners, pull out some of your makeup and flip it over and see if it says fragrance on the back. It probably does. That means it can contain anything that they want. And nobody can question them because it's trade secret.
See, that's a little scary.
Hi, friends. So I'm sort of haunted by clothes. If you follow me on Instagram, you probably know that I love wearing all the new clothes all the time. And I know that that is not really sustainable and not good for the planet. That's why I am thrilled that there is now a way to get all of the clothes with none of the waste. And I'm going to tell you how you can get unlimited clothes with no waste for a month for free. That's right. I now have a website for both myself and you guys where you can get free unlimited clothes with free shipping, free exchanges, nonstop from all of the hottest brands. And it is so incredibly easy. It's called MelanieAvalonsCloset.com. We have so many incredible brands, including my favorites like BCBG, Calvin Klein, and so many more. Think like 100 brands. There are so many options. And the way it works is when you get a subscription, you search through the clothes, pick what you want. They send it to you with fast, easy shipping. You wear it as long as you want. And then when you're ready for more clothes, you just drop it off in their prepackaged envelope and get your next round. It is so incredibly cool. They have multiple plans. The starter plan gives you two pieces at a time. Friends, I actually have a little secret hack. Don't tell them that I told you this. When you get your two pieces, you can actually immediately go into your account, click return, and they'll go ahead and send you the next two pieces. So technically, you can have four pieces at a time. You also have a cool virtual closet that you can keep stocked with everything you eventually want to order, so you never miss out. And if you really like something and want to keep it, you can opt to buy it at a massively discounted price. Friends, I'm obsessed. This is finally the answer to wearing all the clothes all the time with none of the waste. Oh, and of course, one of my major reservations was the cleaning compounds that they use on the clothes, because yes, it is dry cleaning, which normally makes me nervous, and they don't say this on the website, so I reached out to them, and I was like, hey, what's going on with the cleaning? What do you guys use? Because I can't promote this if it's just normal dry cleaning. And thankfully, they let me know that they do not use any detergents, fabric softeners, or chemicals that are harsh. Everything is professionally dry cleaned or laundered with detergents that are free from dyes and scents. It's all gentle and it uses low temperature cycles. So yes, we are good on that front as well. It is the coolest thing ever. And you can try it free for a month. Yes, completely free. Just go to MelanieAvalonsCloset.com to sign up. Free clothes for a month. After that, their plans are super affordable. We're talking honestly, an entire month is less than the cost of typically what would be the cost of one dress. And I am not kidding. That's right. Unlimited clothes for less than the cost of one outfit. I'm just so thrilled to bring this resource to you guys. I can't wait to hear what you guys think. So again, get free unlimited clothes for a month at MelanieAvalonsCloset.com. That's MelanieAvalonsCloset.com for all of the clothes, none of the waste. And definitely share your pictures and tag me on Instagram because I want to see all the fabulous things that you guys are wearing. That's MelanieAvalonsCloset.com.
All right. So the next question comes from Karen. The subject is weight loss surgery and IF. And Karen says, hi, Jen and Melanie. Can't tell you how much I love your show. It guides my 1 hour commute to and from work every day, and I just love it. I may have missed it, but I haven't heard you talk too much about IF and weight loss surgery. I had gastric sleeve surgery 6 years ago and lost 150 pounds. Through menopause, some life changes, and loosening up my rigor, I gained back 40 pounds. I've been doing IF for the past 3 months, slowly working my way up to one meal a day on most days. I fast at least 18 to 24 hours a day, depending on my body. I have also added Serrapeptase based on your suggestions. Great stuff. I am down 12 pounds, which is really exciting. I do have some gastro distress sometimes when I open my window. I think this is mainly because I open with vegetables and it might be too much for my stomach. My question for you, is it safe to do IF after weight loss surgery? I researched online and I've read a bunch of things that says that it is not safe. Of course, much of that comes from bariatric centers. Is there any research that talks about IF and weight loss surgery? Thanks a lot. Jen, have you seen anything about this in the groups?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. It's like, please let Jen have an answer to this one.
Yeah. Well, do I know of any research? No. I haven't seen any research about intermittent fasting and weight loss surgery. I'm not certain that research has been conducted. So, you know, for the people who say whether it's safe or not safe, I mean, we have anecdotes. We have anecdotal type things, that's as far as I know, you know. Anyway, I actually have a friend who I actually interviewed her on intermittent fasting stories, or I can't remember which episode number. Sue is her name. She lives in Chicago. If anybody remembers the episode Sue from Chicago, she had weight loss surgery years ago, and so she does intermittent fasting now, and she and I actually have been on some trips together, and she came to my house for the moderator retreat. You know, you just have to, you're always aware I have not had weight loss surgery, but, you know, listening to Sue and talking to her and the other members of the group that have been through it, that talk about it from time to time, you can't eat a large amount of food at one time. So you may need to do more of a grazing approach throughout your window, and you may need a longer window. Perhaps one meal a day may not be the right approach for you, thinking about, you know, trying to have one plate of food in a short amount of time. Instead, I mean, you could think about it's still going to be one meal's worth of food, but you need to spread it out a little bit. And you need to, you know, find the window that works well for you, because you want to make sure you get in sufficient nutrients. And it's true, you can't eat too much at once, and you have to be careful with what you open with and that sort of thing. I know Sue has to be careful with that as well, but she's figured out a way to make it work for her.
Okay, so it's not the fasting that's the problem. It's because by fasting, you're more likely to eat a ton at once.
It's how to structure your eating window that can be the issue, I think. And that's the time when, like I said, you may need a longer eating window. I would not try to do a 1 hour eating window. You know, if I had this surgery, you need to have a longer period of time to eat.
Okay.
And you just need to be more careful.
Okay. Yeah, that completely makes sense then. Because when I was reading it, I was like, why would fasting not be safe? But it's because by fasting, it's assuming that you're eating, you know, a ton at once. Gotcha. That's one thing that you mentioned, the importance of, you know, getting enough nutrition. One of my recent obsessions now is realizing how nutrient depleted, even like diets that might seem to be nutrient rich can be. Like, I think that's becoming more and more a problem, especially with, because of like our soil and things like that. Did you know they say our soil only has what, 60 something harvests left?
No.
Yeah. Like where there'll be, I guess, nutrients in the soil. And then after that, it's like, there won't be, unless we do something. Sorry, I've been doing it. This has all been coming up a lot with like people reacting to like Game Changers and a lot of the stuff, but it's really, really fascinating. So I think it can be hard just speaking about like nutrients. I think it's really important to get all of your nutrients. I've just been researching that a lot. So
yeah, it really is. And it's not easy. Like, for example, you know, we've talked about magnesium before, and that a lot of people are deficient in magnesium because of soil depletion.
Yeah, it's insane. I'm reading a book right now called Rebuild Your Bones. I had never really contemplated the nature of bones before, but your bones are constantly breaking down and rebuilding, but they are a key source of minerals in your body. So, you know, calcium and, I mean, lots of different minerals are stored there. And because of our common nutrient depletion and stuff, we're often pulling nutrients from our bones. I can think it'd be very hard to get a lot of nutrition in today's world, which is kind of scary.
Well, and you know, I think that there's a lot of the obesity epidemic is because of this. You know, I've said it before, and I didn't make this up, but I heard it and I loved it. We are overfed yet undernourished. And so our bodies, you know, you've heard me say this before as well, our bodies don't count calories. Our bodies are looking for nutrients. So just like that animal I talked about earlier who's searching for salt to lick, if your body hasn't gotten the nutrients that you need, it will send signals for you to keep eating and eating and eating. And so you keep eating and your body says, whoop, that wasn't it. Send something else down. Then you eat something else. Your body's like, that wasn't it either. So on the quest for more nutrients, you keep taking in more food and still not getting the nutrients that you need. So I find I have much better appetite correction when I eat highly nutritious foods, and my body is more likely to say, yep, that was enough.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I always hear this anecdotal story. I've heard this exact same story from like multiple different sources on podcasts and things like that. They'll say that the difference between eating like conventional chicken or something and not feeling full, and then like having like a grass-fed, like pasture-raised, you know, chicken is like so much more filling. Like when you get the animals that do have more nutrition in them, that it can have like a much more filling effect.
Yeah, I'm a believer in, you know, the power of nutrition for satiety. It really makes a difference. And I notice it whenever I eat, quote, junk food, something like that. It doesn't do it.
Yeah, I think it's so huge. So, so huge.
All right. Well, thank you, Karen.
Hi, friends. Now, I know most of you are familiar with the power of protein to help us to recompose our bodies, get fitter and leaner by losing body fat and protecting and gaining muscle or lean body mass. Now, protein supplementation is one of the best ways to do it. It is scientifically validated to help us produce high quality weight loss. Now, when it comes to weight loss, traditionally, a lot of people will do high carb, low calorie diets, and those have been shown to generate upwards of 40% lean body mass loss. Now, protecting your lean body mass and your muscle is crucial when you are wanting to lose some fat, because during weight loss, you don't want the weight lost to be coming from your muscle. The more muscle you're able to retain, the more you're retaining metabolically active tissue, which is going to keep your metabolic rate much higher and help you maintain the fat loss after you have achieved it. Now, one of the best ways, as I said, to do this is through using protein shakes. I've been on the lookout for years to find a high quality protein supplement that does not have fillers, dyes, artificial sweeteners, and using cheap protein concentrate, which can cause all kinds of issues like bloating and indigestion. I finally created a protein supplement that meets my standards, and it's something that I personally use every single day, and that is Tone Protein. Tone Protein not only is extremely clean and high quality with only whey protein isolate, no concentrates, no fillers, it is also scientifically formulated to optimize muscle protein synthesis, which is going to help you build lean body mass and muscle in the most efficient way possible. I am so incredibly excited about Tone Protein. Not only is it extremely high quality and optimized to help you recompose your body, it is also absolutely delicious. We've been having so much fun with all the different flavors that we are creating, and I just can't wait for you all to try it. Now, I wanted to create a special launch discount for all of you listeners so that you could check it out, try it out, see how you like it, and test it out for yourself. In order to receive that launch discount, you can head over to toneprotein.com and sign up with your name and email address, and you'll receive an email to double opt in to the list, and you'll be the first to know when Tone Protein is available to order, and you will also receive that exclusive launch discount. It is going to be the biggest discount that we ever offer on Tone Protein, so I really want all of you to be able to receive it. So be sure to go to toneprotein.com, sign up with your name and email, and you'll be double opted in to that list. And I am so excited for you all to try it out. Let me know what you think of it, and let it help you to optimize your body recomposition goals, get that fat loss, and maintain and protect your lean body mass while doing it.
We're going to move on to Shai's question, and her subject is health at every size. Shai says, I'd love to know your thoughts on the subject of health at every size. Dr. Linda Bacon hits the subject of weight stigma. I've been reading a lot about this very subject. There are so many politics surrounding food and health today. She makes some pretty great arguments. I love IF. I'm also planning to become a dietitian. I want to help all people to have great health, not just be at a goal weight. Thanks for all you do. The next one is from Michelle, and the subject is healthy at every size. She says, question for you. I have found a couple of podcasts talking about health at every size. It has definitely been interesting learning about getting away from the dieter's mentality that we all have lived with for years. I was curious what your take is on this. I am a 37-year-old mom with a 7-year-old daughter. I'm trying to love my body as it is, but at the same time, I still find myself wanting a smaller body. I'm in a 16-18 size pants. I do like all of the positives that IF gives with the side effect of the weight loss, as Jen says. But again, I would like to show my daughter how to love her body no matter what it looks like, while also taking care of herself with food and exercise. Do you believe and support health at every size? Do you feel this conflicts with intermittent fasting and its information and practices? Any information or insight that you can give to me would be wonderful.
Yeah, so these are great questions from Shai. I love that name, Shai. Shai and Michelle. So in general, I love the concept of health at every size. If there's one thing I realize, it's sort of like the opposite. Well, it's the same and the opposite, is that you can be healthy or unhealthy at any size.
That's so true. Yes.
So I think it shouldn't be called even, I don't know, should be called both of those. I would rephrase it to like size doesn't matter or size.
Health despite your size.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
Because when you see health at every size, that implies
that you are healthy at every size.
The implication is that we're only talking about overweight, but we're not.
It also implies that everybody at every size is potentially healthy. You know, I know that's not what it's saying. Yeah, I would like healthy, not size or something. Because in any case, people can be healthy at every size and they can be unhealthy at every size.
Well, then I'm going to say one thing that actually, I don't think you can be healthy at every size. I think that there comes a size, either direction, like you said, you can be on either end of the spectrum and not be healthy. So I don't think that every size is healthy. I think that we can be healthy at a lot of sizes. And I don't think that you have to be society's idea of, you know, this perfect body to be healthy. And I think you can be healthy along a long continuum of weight. But on both ends of the spectrum, there comes a point when you are unhealthy. And maybe it's different for your body and my body. And maybe, you know, a weight for you that's healthy would not be healthy for me and vice versa. But I don't think that, does that make sense? Am I making any sense at all?
Yeah, because,
you know, my 600-pound life, for example, look at the show, My 600-pound Life. Have you ever watched that show? It's so sad to me.
No.
It's people who are stuck in a, I mean, they weigh, you know, 600 pounds and they are stuck in this cycle of eating and they have people that bring them food. And it's just, it's so heartbreaking, this life that they are stuck in, and they desperately want to get out of it, but they are not healthy.
Yeah. I think people can be healthy underweight and they can be healthy overweight, but there are extremes on both sides of that where I don't like making absolutes, but I'm pretty sure it would be very difficult to be healthy. So if you're at the underweight weight of starvation, you know, like malnourishment, that's not healthy. And then if the other side of the spectrum, different layers of obesity, or, you know, it's going to be very hard, because that there's a certain, when your body enters a certain state, it likely got there because of unhealthy, you know, because it's not in a healthy state. I think the misconception is that you can't be healthy if you're underweight or overweight. And I think you can be healthy at, quote, underweights, and you can be healthy at, quote, overweights. But yeah, no, I agree, Jen, that the extremes. And then also, I think, I don't want to make blanket statements, but I think a lot of people who are overweight might be struggling with health issues, because I think those do often go together.
Well, I certainly was. You know, I was obese. I weighed 210 pounds. And I read all about health at every size at that point when I was really struggling with obesity. And I also read all about intuitive eating. And they kind of went together for me, the whole, I'm going to love my body where it is. And I'm going to embrace, you know, I'm not going to try to diet. I'm just going to live. I'm going to let my body do what it does. I'm going to love myself. But when it comes down to it, it didn't feel good to be in an obese body. It was hard to move through the day. And, you know, I've had it both ways now. Now that I've been through that, I'm no longer there. I feel so much better now. Now, does that mean everyone has to live in a smaller, you know, quote, smaller body to feel good? No, but you want to feel good and vibrantly healthy, and you want to find the size body that makes you feel good. But it might not be, you know, the magazine model's body. Mine isn't. I don't look like that. I love my body. It's not perfect.
Yeah, because I think there's a slight disservice here in connecting the size to the healthy issue, because I would rather make it be something about love at every size.
Yeah. And also, when I was obese and my body was big, and I didn't feel healthy or good in my body, and it was hard to move through the day, my body was taking care of me and doing the best it could at that time. It was responding to the way I was living my life, and I was doing what felt like the best I could do at the time. And my body was trying to protect me. And piling on the extra fat was the way my body protected me at that time. My body was doing the best it could do.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's such a wonderful perspective. And so I am like 100% all for like being okay and accepting and loving of yourself at every moment, like 100%. So I'm like down with the whole spirit of the movement.
I love that. Yes. This, yes.
Yeah. I just think the problem comes in when A, it means, oh, you have to accept yourself at a weight that doesn't make you feel good, that actually is potentially unhealthy, but you feel pressured that you need to accept it because of healthy at every size.
And you know, that's interesting that you say that. I actually interviewed someone on Intermittent Fasting Stories. Her name's Taylor, and she's a college student. I think she's in graduate school. She's in her early 20s, I think. I'm trying to remember. Sorry, Taylor, if I got one of those details wrong. But she is, you know, not in my generation. She's closer to your age, younger than you. Says she feels pressure. The whole idea, just like, who was it that said that? Michelle said that she finds herself wanting a smaller body, but wants to model body love to her daughters, but her one daughter. Taylor said the same thing. She's like, her generation, she's been taught to love yourself no matter what, you know, accept your body, love your body. So she felt guilty for wanting a smaller body. Like she was letting herself down for not being satisfied with a larger body. And that was something I'd never thought of before.
Yeah, no, I think that's huge. I think that's huge. I think that also comes into play with even things like money, for example. Like people will feel guilty for having money or something because they've been maybe raised to think money's the root of all evil, or, you know, like different concepts surrounding what money means. Yeah, I think there's this whole, it's very often we engage in a guilt mindset because we don't think we deserve things. So, but then it's complicated with the body weight thing about the guilt. I think you can be healthy at every size. I think if you don't feel comfortable at the size that you're at and you want to be a smaller size, like that's okay.
Yeah. Health at every size absolutely does not conflict with intermittent fasting. You know, I talked about, because you know, that was something Michelle asked, if we think it conflicts with intermittent fasting. You know, I opened today by talking about the effects of intermittent fasting on health, aging, and disease. That's the title of the article in the New England Journal of Medicine. So I would love for 100% of the people who started intermittent fasting to start it for health purposes. So I think that is completely in line with health at every size because, you know, I have these large intermittent fasting support groups. We're up to over 280,000 members. Melanie, can you imagine?
That's insane.
It's insane. Over 280,000 members combined in my Facebook groups. And not everyone drops a ton of weight. But, you know, it's not unusual to have someone make a post, especially in the advanced group, where they'll say, I've been doing intermittent fasting for an entire year and I've only lost 2 pounds. So why did I not quit? Because I've never felt better and my skin tags fell off and I'm finally sleeping through the night. And you know, they haven't lost any weight, but their health has improved so much that they will never quit. So, you know, intermittent fasting is not only about weight loss. It's the health plan with the side effect of weight loss. You got to get healthy first. And maybe your size is always going to be larger than you know, would prefer it to be or society thinks you should be. And that's when you can love yourself at every size because you are healthy.
Yeah, I just want to do a caveat there because you said love yourself because you're healthy. I think you, even if you're not healthy, that doesn't mean.
Exactly. Don't love yourself if you're not healthy. I didn't mean that.
Oh, no, I know.
It's not how I meant that. Love yourself. Yeah, love yourself, but love yourself totally disconnected from your size. The size is irrelevant as to whether or not you love yourself. And you can be healthy and intermittent fasting can make you healthier, but not change your weight a lot. That can happen. And if you only focus on the weight loss, you'll be missing like the biggest piece of the picture.
I just don't think there should be morality surrounding weight or surrounding health.
I agree with that 100% because for someone like me who struggled so hard when I was obese and it felt so bad and I really was trying so hard and I couldn't figure it out and I kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger until I finally was just giving up. And, you know, someone could have looked at me and said, oh, Jen's let herself go or what's, but I was trying really hard. I was just, you know, my body was fighting against things I was doing that I thought were the right things that weren't the right things for my body. There's a lot of guilt.
Yeah, there's so much And I think it's ironic because I think this movement is trying to remove guilt, but I think because it is tying in a moral aspect to it, it's slightly having a little bit of the opposite effect.
I would encourage people to not feel guilt for wanting to have a body that feels the right size to you. And if that is a smaller body, that's okay. It's okay to want to have a smaller body because it feels really good to curl up in an airline seat, you know, and it just does. So my heart goes out to everybody who's trapped where I was in that feeling of, I don't know what to do about this because I was there for so many years. I get it.
All right. So we have one more question. This comes from Rose. The subject is water. Rose says, "Hi, I just started listening to your podcast. Wondering, can you add lemons or cucumbers to the water we drink during our fast to make it like spa water?" It's been a while since we've had one of these questions, Jen.
I'm sorry, Rose, but the answer is no. We do not want to add any flavor to our water because your brain will taste that flavor and say, ooh, lemon, ooh, cucumber, and your brain thinks you're having food. And so the answer is no. You need your water to be plain, although it does sound fabulous, spa water. Save the spa water for inside your eating window. Your eating window can be a giant spa extravaganza, but keep your fast clean, plain water, no flavors. We don't want your brain to think food is coming in.
Yeah.
See? Easy.
Yep. That was an easy answer.
That was an easy one. Don't add anything to your water. Right now I'm sitting here drinking some hot water. It actually got lukewarm, so I'm drinking lukewarm water. I'm getting over a little cold. We went on this cruise and Chad never gets sick. I mean, I'm talking like never. He's had the flu and it's lasted a day before in the past. Like he has the constitution of like, you know, he never gets sick. But Chad picked up this cold on board the cruise ship and then he gave it to me. And I felt great. I only had one day where I didn't feel great, but that's when my voice sounds a little weird today, if anybody can tell. Then Will got it and Will never gets sick. So anyway, that's why I sound funny. I feel great, but I just don't know if anybody noticed that I sound a little different. I'm a little stuffy.
Oh, I didn't notice. I actually just got back my results. Have you heard of Inside Tracker?
I have not.
It's like this company, they do blood tests and also genetic tests, and then they analyze. I'm interviewing them tomorrow, actually, for my other podcast. But they basically have, you know, looked at all the lab works and tried to figure out what they think is most actually important as far as like health and longevity goes and like what should be tested. And they make recommendations and so it's pretty interesting. I'm going to like drill them on blood testing because I have a lot of questions about blood tests. But
well, good.
I don't think they're probably expecting that. They're probably just thinking I'm going to ask like about their system. But I have a lot of questions.
They haven't met you yet.
So I was even just thinking today when I was listening to that Peter Attia, I was like, oh, I'm going to ask them about that, about free fatty acids in the bloodstream as indicators of metabolic health because that was one of the things they tested actually for me. The thing I scored highest in, like on the good side, was immunity. I think it's because my body is like so, like, what's the word? On alert about things that I don't know. They say that people, I don't know if this is true, but I was listening to the ATP Project podcast and they were saying how people who might want to be worried are people who like never get sick because they're more likely to be predisposed to something, you know, actually taking them down compared to people who are kind of sick all the time because that means their immune system might be constantly going. So I don't know if that's
probably somewhere in the middle is where you'd want to be. I have a feeling.
Like, yeah. I just remember the guy. I love the ATP Project. They're so funny. He was just like, yeah. He's like, the people who come in and say, I never get sick. And he's like, that could be a problem because down the road.
Here's when I get sick. It's always surrounding a time when I have had wider windows. Like when I travel, well, of course, traveling, you know, you're in that petri dish of the airplane or whatever, but traveling and holidays, if I'm sick, it's around traveling or a holiday.
Yep. It's so funny. You know, Stephanie Ruper, who wrote that intermittent fasting post forever ago about being bad for women on her Well-Fed Women podcast. One of the things she said recently, I guess she started doing intermittent fasting more and she said that, she like never gets sick now. She thinks it's probably from
the fasting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do find that I get over it so quickly. You know, I was only mildly sick for like a day. I didn't feel great. Other than that, I just had the little scratchiness. But fasting lets our bodies deal with it.
Yep, yep.
It certainly doesn't linger on for weeks like you hear, you know, happening with other people.
Yep. All right. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. So a few things for listeners before we go. If you'd like to submit your own questions for the podcast, you can directly email questions at ifpodcast.com, or you can go to ifpodcast.com and you can submit questions there. You can also go to ifpodcast.com/stuffwelike for all of these stuff that we like. I need to edit that link because I posted about Serapeptase on Instagram because I'm trying to be more on Instagram now. And everybody was commenting, like wanting to know my brands and all this stuff. And because I made that link, if you go to ifpodcast.com/Serapeptase, it's like a guide to Serapeptase. But I guess I didn't update the IF Podcast Stuff We Like page because so many people have been like, you're still recommending the Doctor's Best brand on that page, because I don't recommend that brand anymore. So I'll fix that. But that's a treasure trove for all of these stuff that we like. And then you can follow us on Instagram. We are IF Podcast. I'm Melanie Avalon. Jen is Jen Stevens. And you can follow us on Twitter. We are the IF Pod.
Awesome.
All right. Anything from you, Jen, before we go?
No, I think that's it. We had another great episode.
I know. We actually got through all our questions. I don't think that's ever happened.
We did. And I don't think that's ever happened either.
Well, okay, wait, listeners. I mean, we have like hundreds of questions, but the ones we picked for today.
Yeah. We didn't get through all the questions that exist. We got through all the ones we had written down to get to. Maybe we're just better at not having too many questions.
Maybe I'm getting more intuitive
about what we could answer. Yeah.
Okie dokie. Well, I will talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Please remember that everything discussed on the show is not medical advice. We're not doctors. You can also check out our other podcasts, Intermittent Fasting Stories and the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Theme music was composed by Leland Cox. See you next week.